Welcome to the Quantum Leopard podcast. Quantum Leopard is a multi-award winning, pay what you like, no punching down, no picking on the audience, gender balance booking, Central London Saturday night of lovely comedy, and this is its podcast. Every episode we'll have a recording of a real live set from one of our nights and an interview with the comedy brain behind it. We have videos of full shows up on patreon.com/quantumleopard, and that's going to have loads of sets that aren't in the podcast as well. We only charge when new live show videos come out. I'm your host and MC James Ross, and this is Quantum Leopard. This episode, we have the wonderful Katie Mitchell, and this set was recorded on the 2nd of April 2022 by Matt Hyten at 2 Northdown, and the interview took place on the 4th of July 2023. Katie is a witchy lesbian goth madness all the way from exotic Nottingham. Content warnings on this set for experience of homophobia. Enjoy!
Pint of beer, pint of milk, pint of blood. Shag, marry, or kill. We'll get back to it, so hello! Hello, I am Katie Mitchell, I'm a goth. I'm a goth in the same way that Alan Jones is a celebrity. In that I very much made my point when I was 14, and now I'm just kind of keeping up appearances. I bought the boots, you know, and kind of committed, you know. So, hello! I've had a horrible time during the pandemic, I don't mind telling you. It did me no good, one at all. But I consoled myself by thinking, oh, it's all going to feed into the art. Like, it's all going to feed in. Like, a lot of my favourite musicians had really shitty lives before they joined the bands that I love, and then it all fed in and made the music better. Like, I don't know how many fans of Iron Maiden we've got in. Hey, man, gig. Their song, Number of the Beast, the intro to it actually references Bruce Dickinson's previous job. I don't know how many of you know this. The intro of it, people who aren't a fan, who don't know, it's a good band, I'd recommend it. people who don't know that song, it starts off like this. Woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil sends the beasts with wrath, for he knows the time is short. Let him who hath understanding reckon the number of the beast, for it is a human number. Its number is 0800-00-1066. That's from when Bruce Dickinson used to sell insurance. So, as you might have been able to tell from the Iron Maiden joke, I am clearly a lesbian. It's not an existing stereotype, but it's one I'm trying. If I do it in enough places, I can get it going. Here, probably. Last night I did a gig in South Wigston of places, which had a racist bar around the corner, and I was quite frightened. And I don't know if that's the particular part they will remember. I am a lesbian. Hey. I used to get bigger cheers for that, but it's been about a year since I came out, and no one gives a shit anymore. But it took me 2 years to come out as a lesbian. 2 years, which is far too long. That's enough time to write and produce the film Rocky twice. Which I would rather have done, to be honest. I don't know if that is my own internalised homophobia or a latent love of boxing that's going to come out 2 years down the line. Before that, I thought I was a bisexual woman until I realised, actually, that compared to most bisexual women, I actually hate men less. I'm a lesbian, I've just found the ones I like, I hang out with them, it's nice. I don't have to look for them, they just happen. The reason it took me 2 years to come out as a lesbian was that I kept on trying to come out to my queer friends. And I don't know if anyone questioning in here, you must never do this, because the problem with the youth of today, the queer youth of the Gen Z queer youth of snowflake youth of today, is they've done far too much reading. And they will argue with you more than any of your homophobic relatives. But I first tried to come out to my friend Samantha. Samantha's bisexual. Her favourite colour is purple. She likes cats and crystals. She's one of those bisexuals. Top tier bisexuals. I saw someone just elbow someone. I'm so happy to be here. I was originally booked for this gig in 2020, I think. So I'm very happy to be here. And I came out to her, and I was like, I was quite sad, and I was like, oh, I think I'm a lesbian, this is really inconvenient. I'm gonna fuck. And she was like, Kate, hey, you funky little bisexual. I've read all of the queer theory, both ironically and unironically. And like, sexuality is fluid, you know. Sometimes you like girls more, sometimes you like guys more, sometimes you like non-binary people all of the time. You know, and like, you're a woman, your sexuality is fluid. Women are fluid, like the moon. A famously dry object. The only liquid on the moon is a can of Red Stripe that Kubrick spilt in the 60s. But I accepted this, and I was like, oh, okay. And I continued to get sadder and more depressed and tried to talk to other people, and they all had, like, things they'd read, and they were like, oh, you should read this. And I was like, I don't want to. little did I know, when you become a lesbian, you have to read even more queer theory. And it wasn't working, and everyone was talking me out of it. So I had to change tactics. And so I decided that I was going to come out to my straight ally friend. Do we have any straight allies in the audience? So I came out to my straight ally friend, and I was like, I'm really sad about it. I think I might be a lesbian. It's very inconvenient. I have a boyfriend who's quite cool. And what she said was, hi, I'm your straight ally friend. You have come out to me as a lesbian. Congratulations, lesbian. Here, have these rainbow pride socks. I'm your straight ally friend. I saw one red poster in 2003 that said, some people are gay, get over it. And I haven't thought about gender or sexuality a damn minute since then. I'm your straight ally friend. I know that if I in any way question whether this might be a phase, I will be kicked to death in the streets. As I should be, pride flag! I'm your straight ally friend. I go roller skating at an all-women's roller skating group, and I think some of them might be gay. Would you like to come roller skating with me, fresh homosexual? I insist to my four-year-old so much that I'm okay if you're gay. I'm okay if you're gay. I'm okay if you're gay. Almost to the point of brainwashing. I'm your straight ally friend. I bought rainbow cupcakes to Pride and didn't have the foresight to make them vegan. I'm your straight ally friend. I can drive. I'm your straight ally friend. I'm a Christian, but like the cool kind of Christian, the kind of Christian that only abides by love thy neighbor, the parable of the Good Samaritan, and the church's monthly casserole rota. I'm your straight ally friend. Notably, thou shalt not kill was not on that list. I'm your straight ally friend. Joe Lycett is my favorite comedian. I'm your straight ally friend. As your straight ally friend, I understand that not all bits need to necessarily be building to a point. And to expect that of any comedian, needless Katie Mitchell, is literally the definition of homophobia. Oh, Jesus. Right, okay, we are. That took longer than I expected. We are going to do a very quick joke about Black Sabbath. No build-up. The thing I said about the four, same setup. What is this that stands before me? Figure in blackface that points at me. Oh, no! That's from when Ozzy Osbourne was in a Morris dancing troupe. And I promise my friend her favourite joke, but it is 2.5 minutes long, and I spent a minute of that telling a Black Sabbath joke. So instead, I'm going to leave you with this. It's a lot easier to be gay now than it was in the past. Specifically a lesbian. It's a lot easier to be a lesbian now than it was in the past. Not even for homophobia reasons. Like, obviously, that is like less than it was. But also, I don't know about how many of you know this, I don't know if it's made it down to London yet, the popular technique of when you're going down on a woman, using your tongue to spell letters on her clitoris. It's very, very nice, highly recommended. And you can do that all you want these days, but 50, 60 years ago, you couldn't do that. Couldn't do it, because every time you said a letter, her hips would slowly shift to the right until a little bell went off and you had to shunt them back into place. So thank you. We've had about 10 minutes and James is going to wrestle me off the stage. Pint of beer, pint of milk, pint of blood, shag, marry, kill, now. Did I even ask you? Yeah, it was. Good, yeah.
Oh, God. Kill the pint of blood.
Good.
Sorry. Yeah.
Marry the kind of bit. Screams of yeast infection, but like cool. And shag the milk.
Yeah.
It's weird. Anyway. No one has ever gone with that. I've been doing that 4 years. A London town! Thank you very much. I've been Katie Mitchell.
And that was Katie Mitchell. Thank you so much, Katie. That was a cracking set. I really, really enjoyed that. That was amazing.
Thank you so much.
Well, you've earned it, champ. So how are you feeling like coming into this gig? Like, how did you find the audience? How did you find the space? How were you?
Excited. And also quite nervous, I think, because I knew, or I hadn't realised about the existence of the Quantum Leopard competition. And so I felt like, oh, I'm getting a set without having to do the competition. It feels feels like I'm cheating almost. So I have to be good now, because if I die, and the other stuff, people in the competition who've done better than me, they're like, who the fuck is she?
This Aravist. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Coming down from the provinces. Who does she think she is? Yeah. It is a mix. So I tend to, like, most of the people that I book in for the 10 spots are people who've won the competition at some point in the past. But I do get in some, but not very many at all, other people who I'm particularly interested in or excited by. And you were definitely one of those. Because I remember seeing your set during one of Andrew O'Neill's online ones during lockdown. And you were doing some sort of weird crafty thing with puppets, but it was also like a tour around your house. Do you remember anything of that that dark mid-pandemic episode? That's what drew me in the first place.
No, I'd forgotten about that until I'd found some photos from that era when I was going through my phone, and I was like, oh yeah, I was just making a lot of weird art during the start of the pandemic. And then Animal Crossing came out, and I spent 460 hours playing that instead.
Yeah,
and my creative process went down the toilet. But
tell me you don't have a child without telling me you don't have a child. So you are a goth. So this is immediately visually obvious for anybody who's seeing you on stage. So do you find that being sort of pretty sort of aesthetically distinctive is helpful for marketing yourself as a comedian? Or does it bring like a load of baggage and expectations that you kind of like have to address and unpack as a performer?
It's more useful than not, for sure. I think on stage, I've always been reluctant about addressing it, because it feels like... Because even though I'm a goth and I look like that most of the time, in this recording I've got no makeup on and the hair's not there, and so I've
Don't
got
spoil
like a
the
slightly
illusion, Katie.
Satanic t-shirt on, but that's it. It's doing a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah.
But in regards to my day-to-day life, I do look like that. I was wearing the dungarees in the video yesterday. But I'm worried about it becoming too costumey, and if I have a full set of goth stuff, it becomes a shtick. And also... Mm. It's something that I kind of ambiently do, I guess. Oh, it's just what I like, and it's what I've looked like since I was like in primary school when I first saw a goth and was like, I want to be that. So it's not hugely interesting to me to do like, oh, isn't my hair crazy?
Yeah.
That's more interesting to other people. I just even in my dreams, I look like that, you know.
Your bit about lesbians loving Iron Maiden and wanting to establish that as a stereotype. So I really like that approach comedically, because, you know, lots of comedians will go for the sort of, here's an aspect of my identity, now I'm going to riff on it. And you're just like, no, okay, I've done the riffing, and I'm going to build back from that. And I'm going to make the stereotype. I'm going to make reality to conform to the stereotype that I wish to build in my own image. So, I mean, in terms of lesbian stereotypes more generally, like, do you feel that you're bound by them? Do you feel confined by them? Like, what do you think are the most pernicious for you personally?
I think, so I've been out about 2 years now. Yeah, just over 2 years. And so for me, they're still kind of comforting as a cup that I can sit in. And it was, you know, it was something that before, when I thought I was bisexual, but like wanted to be a lesbian and then would like rebel against and feel gross about. And it was all a bloody cycle. So I think now it's quite a common thing, like recently after people come out, is to be like pride flag on everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Funky new haircut. And every joke is a lesbian joke, and I am going to conform to the stereotypes whether I really want to or not, but it's just freeing. And I mean, I think the negative stereotypes I don't really find so negative anymore, I suppose, in terms of like, but like, what are the lesbian stereotypes? Is that you're good at fixing things?
Or, like, I mean, I
love Butch Dykes so much, yeah. And those are the people who are most maligned, but I just want to be more like them. But I'm useless and like eyeliner, so I can't.
I suppose a lot of the ones that kind of like filter their way through to kind of progressive circles, that we would still kind of maintain that knowledge, that would form part of our sort of mental furniture, mental scaffolding around the concept of lesbianism. Like, because we're sort of progressively minded people, they are broadly positive. They are like, okay, a lesbian can put up a shelf. A lesbian is quite commitment minded, which I suppose is sort of pretty value neutral, but on balance, broadly positive.
Yeah.
... Depending how you are yourself are temperamentally inclined. Where's sensible shoes? I mean, I think that's fine. Like, you know,
I've got steel toe caps on stage there, just in case a light falls down.
But you know, having steel on your shoes, there's electrical repairs and or tap dancing, right? Like, these are fun. So that's all nice. But I mean, it sounds to me like you know, you've kind of embraced that a bit as being a sort of a constructive framework for building a new identity, rather than something that is necessarily I hate myself because of this thing that society says about me.
Yeah, I did. I was very surprised, actually, in the time coming up to coming out. So I came out in April 21. And the time before that, I was really surprised about, like, feeling upset about, like, if I wanted to have kids, the adoption process, you know, like, the mechanics of having kids were going to be much more difficult. And I couldn't opt out of... Oh, that's a really bad thing to say, but, like... homophobia was definitely like going to come my way far more than it would as I had been living, because I was in a relationship with a man. We were both bisexual, but we were in that kind of straight passing thing. But then I don't want to be biphobic in any of that, because there's so much biphobia from lesbians. I had that from the first woman I ever went on a date with when I was about 16. No, it would have been older. I would have been like 18, actually. And I went on a date with her and said I was bisexual, and she said she wasn't interested in anything that had a man in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So in terms of biphobia, I'm not fucking doing that, because it made me feel disgusting. It was horrible. But I think, I don't know, I've had some therapy about it, and in terms of like, feeling gross and not feeling sexy because of the like compulsory heterosexuality in my head. But I've done therapy about it, and I've got a girlfriend. I've had a lot of sex about it, and now it's entirely positive.
Sure. I mean, which have you found most constructive for building a new identity? Has it been the therapy? Has it been the sex? Has it been comedy?
I think the sex, honestly.
That's fair.
Since that's the main bit of the sexuality.
of the three main things there, one of those is irreducibly lesbian, really, isn't it? There's not really getting around that. Yeah, okay, fair enough. So you're a bit about arguing with your young queer friends. So I really like this, because this, to me, is like, it's very much, I think, a trope within queer comedy of, like, arguing with homophobic conservatism, the older generation. I'm like, I like this from the other side, right? Like, so you're on the inside of this frame of reference, so you definitely get to say this, but you're arguing the young people today and kind of like reclaiming the language of the youth of today, the liberal snowflakes, etc.
Yeah.
which I really like. So I think you lean into that really, really nicely, and you deliver it in a really conversational way. So I mean, just in terms of like the sort of the sentiment behind that, I mean, like, do you find that the sort of the structures of queer theory and, you know, the background reading that you have to do, does that gatekeep aspects of sexuality for you?
Maybe, but then it was downloading TikTok in 2020. I'd already been having lesbian thoughts in 2019, but TikTok in 2020, that famously accurate algorithm clocked me immediately and started sending me like the lesbian master doc and stuff on compulsory heterosexuality that I hadn't considered. That material though was from Truth, and I'd like the characters in it later on were based on real people. It was originally three separate characters based quite opaquely on several people. And basically I'd heard from multiple people that because I'd been with men and I'd been in a long-term relationship with a man for about 4.5 years and it wasn't going particularly well interpersonally, I was, you know, just having a bit of grass is greener. And someone did say to me that as a woman, my sexuality is more fluid. So like the idea that I would definitely be a lesbian and have these like hard, rigid structures was like not as good. And that were things that people said to me that really upset me. And then when it did kind of make me second guess myself. Oh, and another one was that someone who I had been with who was assigned male at birth, but at the time was just like, I'm a cross-dresser, and now is like femme presenting non-binary. Mm-hmm. Was like, well, you've been with me, so you're clearly not a lesbian. I'm like, but you look like a girl. That's my favorite bit. it was during that conversation 2019 when I first started going like, oh no, because I said to them, no, but like, I don't fancy you like a man, because the way that I fancy men makes me feel kind of gross and icky, but I fancy you like I fancy women, which feels really hot and good. And I was like, oh, time to think about that. And I'm sure nothing bad will happen, which will keep me locked in a house for 2 years. So I just have to think about that.
Alone
or
with my
play
thoughts.
Animal Crossing.
Animal Crossing to keep out the queer theory. Interesting that. It it's just interesting there what you're saying about, like, because there you've got a direct conflict between sort of the objective, like, lived reality of your sexuality of, like, okay, well, I'm with this person and they have a particular form of gender presentation here, but in my head I have my desires. Like, how do my desires for a particular type of person, category of person, you know, collection of body parts or whatever, or aesthetic, how do they map onto what, the lived reality of my sexuality is, of, like, you know, what stroke who I'm doing, right? And you've got that clash between who they are and what you desire, and then the idea of each other, which I think a lot of people have in relationships, like, do I love you or do I love the idea of you? But you've got that for sexuality, and the stakes are much higher because it involves fundamentally who you both are as people.
Yeah, it was an interesting time.
Yeah.
I came out, I had the opposite reaction. So in the straight ally friend bit of material, which is right after,
yeah.
First one is, would you like to come to a women? Would you like to come to a women's only roller skating group? I think some of them might be gay. That was a woman called Nicola, who I used to do improv with, a Miss Imp, like 3 years before, and she'd seen my like coming out post on Facebook and immediately invited me to that. And she bought me a card with a wrestler on it because she knew I'd got really into like pro wrestling, because during lockdown when I was very depressed, I developed like 6 to 8 week obsessions with things that mm-hmm, were incredibly mm-hmm. deep until I got bored with them, and then I moved on to something else.
Yeah.
And one of them was wrestling, so she knew I liked that. And like, I hadn't had a reaction like that from any of my queer friends. They were like, oh, okay, whatever, we're all gay, it's fine. My aunt sent me like a little gift package of like, congrats, you're out, with like a card and some rainbow pride socks, which is also part of
nice. yeah.
And then it was kind of, after that it goes into conjecture, and I wrote loads of like straight ally stuff. And it's funny how some things that I don't seem part of the crowd, but audiences really like them. So the most popular one of those jokes by far, or like the hardest hitting, is the I made rainbow cupcakes to Pride. I brought rainbow cupcakes to Pride and didn't have the foresight to make them vegan. I'm your straight ally friend. I don't think that's more special than any of the others, but it consistently gets the most, to the point where I really shouldn't have it. I don't know. I think it does actually work well as like the third one in the set of like, almost like a tent pole. No, this is getting used to this structure.
I mean, like, from a technical perspective, like, you really, like, you hammer home all the points, you have that emphasis and you have that structure, and you call back to the previous line with I'm your straight ally friend, like, every time you're doing that, and you've got loads of bridging jokes along the way. I don't think it's necessarily a problem if you've got a 9 out of 10 bridging joke that is got a couple of 7 out of 10s on either side. It doesn't need to be a constant progression, or provide you end with a bit that you really like at the end. I mean, like, you then you undercut it at the end with the meta humor for the, which certainly works for the comedy savvy crowd like Quantum Leopard. I mean, personally, I find that the best one, because that then ties it back and it makes it personal again, because it's you're saying, like, you know, well, if you dislike this or hold me in any way accountable, then that's homophobia. And that's really nice, because that's setting you up as like the lesbian Captain Mannering of like, I am puffy and high status, how very dare you. And that's the humor, but because you're doing it to yourself, everyone's on board with that, and everyone knows that you're doing that consciously. And okay, some unalloyed praise here. This bit isn't a question. So I really like the alphabet technique bit. I think that's a really excellent recognizing a phenomenon, shifting gears on the absurdity, generating heat with this disjuncture with the typewriter carriage. Just absolutely spot on. Love it to bits. Amazing. Right. No notes. No questions about that. It's really, really good, right? Unless there's anything you want to say about it.
I wish I could engineer that type of shit. I think that was one of those magical things where it fell into my head and I laughed and I wrote it down, and it was very minimally edited, and I don't know what. I don't really remember writing it or where it came from. It just kind of appeared in my life. Probably came from a dream. I don't know. It was... I wish I could. I think it's great as well. I don't know where it came from, but I love it.
I think it reminds me a lot of the sort of the improv advice that I had when I was doing like long form classes, of like, you do a scene with this character, right? And here's this character and they are at work. Okay. And now you change it, and this character in the next scene, they're at home. And it's like that, I think, for the alphabet, right? So the alphabet in the first scene, they're at work. They're, you know, in, on, or around a clitoris, right? And then you take them to smash cut, next scene, and then they're at a typewriter, right? That's what the alphabet is doing. So it's giving that thing the half twist and changing the context, I think, is the underlying mechanic. If there is one thing that you could say to yourself at the age of 18, what would it be?
Just don't be around people who make you feel cringe or embarrassing, or you need to be cool. And cringe as a concept is made up and bullshit anyway.
I
managed to avoid it for so much of my early teens, because I was bullied from every single angle that I had no one to try and fit in with, in a way.
horrible and sad, but understandable. Yep, sorry, carry on.
It was a fairly lonely childhood. But I, it was also the most creative I've ever been in my life was when I was a teenager. And it was only annoyingly when I started finding my people that I then was exposed to feeling peer pressure for the first time. And, I'd gone to uni and I was making all different friends and comedy and goth scene and all the rest of it. And, I remember like agonizing over whether my outfits were goth enough or whether my stand-up was too weird or not weird enough. I think those aims are good, but I found the kind of pleasing everyone element of it very stifling. Something which I'm like still kind of deprogramming myself from now, and like doing drawings and paintings and music and all of that stuff again. I think art school helped in a lot of ways because it was kind of pure creativity, but also it very much had a kind of expected a certain elevation of you. Whereas if you were doing things because it was just nice or just funny or just looked good, that's not enough reason. It needs to have like a dark, gritty inner core and metaphors. And I really fell into that trap of like everything has to be so deep and like edgy and cool, and I sucked all of the joy out of my art for a while, and it's good to be back in it for sure.
Cool, lovely stuff, excellent. So thanks very much, Katie. It's wonderful chatting with you. If you want to catch up with you and your stuff, what have you got to plug?
So my Instagram is Katie Zoe Mitchell. My website is katiezoemitchell.co.uk. Nice one for grabbing that. And yeah, everything will be on my link tree on my Instagram, and I'll hopefully have an Edinburgh show by August, but who knows?
Great, go see that if it exists. If it doesn't, don't. Okay, cool. Thanks again for that, Katie. It's been really lovely chatting. Speak soon. Bye.
Bye.
That was the Quantum Leopard podcast. If you want to catch a live show in London, look us up at linktree.com/Quantum Leopard to sign up to the mailing list. We will never take advertising because advertising is cultural poison, but from each according to their ability to each according to their need. So if you enjoyed our guests in your ears, but would like them in your eyes as well, we have videos of whole shows up on patreon.com/Quantum Leopard. We only charge when a new live show video comes out. If you enjoyed the show, why not give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice and or share this episode on the socials. Editing was by Reese Lawton, who is conventionally attractive and fun at parties. Music was composed and produced by Rooks Production Services at I Am Rooks on the socials. That's Rooks with an E. The Quantum Leopard podcast is distributed and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License, which means you can share it as much as you like, but don't change it or sell it in any way, because I will find out where you live. Kind love and see you soon. Bye.
You know, when I'm out with my girlfriend, straight people are always asking us questions. You know, straight people always asking us questions. They see two women together, and they've only got one idea of what a relationship looks like in their mind. You know, and they're always asking questions. They're always asking questions like, which one are you? Which one are you? So annoying. Which one are you? Are you the Tess Daly or are you the Claudia Winkleman? And I'm like, no, we're lesbians. We're both the Claudia Winkleman. That's the whole point.